If you hold a stone, hold it in your hand. If you feel the weight.
Dear listeners, my name is Catherine Hogg, and I'm a curator at the Kunsthaus Zurich, Switzerland. This podcast was released as part of the Ligia Clark retrospective at the Kunsthaus on view from November 14, 2025 to March 8, 26. The show was developed in cooperation with the Neue Nationalgalerie in Berlin and is the first comprehensive exhibition of the Brazilian artist's work in the German-speaking world. As a leading representative of neoconcretismo, Clark first expanded the image into space, then sculpture took on an increasingly strong connection to the body, until the representative and object-like artwork was finally abandoned altogether in the 1970s. To this day, Clark's objects and installations allow viewers to become active participants in an enlarged notion of the artwork. She herself said, "For me, creating art is about developing oneself as a human being, which is the most important thing of all. Art should not emulate any name or concept." Quote end. In this podcast series, contemporaries and specialists such as Alessandra Clark, Yvan Lambois, and Irene Small shed light on the great relevance of Clark's work today. Enjoy listening. We have our guest today, Alessandra Clark, and I would kindly ask you, Alessandra, to give a short intro to yourself before I ask you some exciting questions, I'm sure, for our audience today.
Hi, Catherine. I'm Alessandra, Ligia Clark's granddaughter. I'm a designer and helped throughout the foundation's history to have the Ligia's legacy presented to the world.
So tell me, Alessandra, the foundation, when was it founded? How did it grew over the years? Was it right after Ligia passed away, or was it later on? And when were you really, you mentioned that you were involved right from the beginning. So I would be curious when that was. And
The family started with the foundation in the beginning of 2000 because they started seeing a lot of interest after Ligia's first retrospective after her death, around the replicas and around the sensorial objects that should be produced so that public could understand and experience the works, and also the interest about Ligia's writings and conceptual legacy that that we had in her special notes during all her work life.
So when you, for our audience to understand, for example, the bijou, you make the replica, you use the same material as Ligia, and you orient yourself for the design and development on already existing bijous. How can we imagine a little bit the concrete process when you construct replicas, and what does it need to, what are the main factors for validation of these replicas? How can we imagine that?
Well, the biggest importance of the replicas are their existence, because or else people wouldn't have the chance to experiment the works. We try, and usually we still can do as most original as possible. Like the bijous, as you mentioned, like they are done in aluminium, the same materials with the same dimensions, so that people can understand and use the works as they were supposed to.
And are there sorry, my English sometimes is a little bit shaky. But what are the biggest challenges in terms of materials? I mean, are the materials that you
that maybe you cannot find anymore, or like some sort of plastic for the costumes? Or are there some challenges in terms of material, how you could maybe alter the propositions in extension the replica? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, the replica have been developed 50, 60 years ago, and sometimes just materiality changes. So is this a discussion or not?
This is there are two big discussions. One is try to preserve aesthetically and sensorially all the works. The idea of having the most similar materials are fundamental so that we can reach the most correct way, Lija's perceptions about the experiences. Of course, there are a lot of things that we can't find anymore in the market because it were like things used in the past as horse hair to simulate the men's costumes in the IMU and other sorts of tissues and bags found in the fruit markets. But so we try to make it the most correct possible in the way that respects the sensorial aesthetic. And the other big challenge is that these works, like Lija used to do it, to be used once during an experiment, and then she will do it a next work, like a next replica to be used another day. And our challenge in museums is that the museums have exhibitions throughout months, and we have to make the works to be like durable, so people can use it and it doesn't break or it has no harm to the work, so that it could be experienced to another person also, you know, throughout the show.
Oh, I see. I understand. So, our current context, the retrospectives in Berlin and Zurich, I mean, there are large audiences, and there's, in one case, there is summer, in the other, there is winter. So there is all these erosion factors, right? So, in a way, for me as a curator, it makes totally sense also to be in constant exchange with you, who takes care of the legacy of Lija. I was wondering, I mean, you accompany these activations of Lija's propositions for many, many years now. How did you observe the change of interaction from the public? I mean, the public today is not the same as in 10 years ago or at Lija's time, when these particular works were even not shown in museums. I mean, the museum context is certainly also a new context. So I was wondering a little bit, this would be a whole book to write about, right? To think about the change and alteration of these audiences. But just to take the example of maybe pre-COVID and after COVID, I mean, do you feel that people are more interested to experience sensual art, what role does, for example, the internet and smartphone play?
Well, I don't think that COVID had much a difference. I think during and a little bit afterwards, people were concerned and how they can prevent like viruses and passing by throughout the objects that are being to be experienced. But all the like, how can I say it? When a person experiments each time she will try the same work, the same sensorial object or the same proposition, she will feel and experience in a different way. So it's not because of the timing, but like the person that it's doing the experience. The way that they do, like in first, they are very shy and to the collective, to the group, and throughout, like who's watching, you know, and while a time is passing on, or during the same experience, or in the next day experience, you see that people just stay more comfortable and they stay more focused on the work and what, like, they're taking out from the work and what they're bringing to the group, you know. It's a it's like a kind of personal development throughout the work and the person itself, you know. The internet, I think, helped a lot because it's a way to propagate the experiences, because people are curious when they see people using and doing, and they feel that they would like to experience it the same way. And what they can see is sometimes it's difficult to make it like a homemade replica, and they want to go to the museums. But a lot of times, you know, teachers and the person themselves, they can do it like their own works, replicas at home, and experience them. And then when they show this to the audience in the phone and by the internet, like it just propagates, and there's more people interested and more legacy being exposed.
I understand. So it's really also a collective. The notion of the collective was very important to Ligia. I mean, with the collective head and the collective body. And nowadays we are speaking so much also about individualism, and people want to are secluded in their own world and behind their smartphone screens and so on. So it sounds great, because it's in a way a contradiction of having this. Look at the screen about a collective process. And this might invite or understand it and feel it like that very much. And we could see it again also in Berlin. We will experience it in Zurich, how people so much almost had an awakening experience. They were starting to be really curious about people, how their experience is with Ligia's propositions. And yeah, as you said, first they are shy, but then this moment of experiencing something in a group is less common nowadays than it was maybe before, a few years where you had to go to a bar to have a drink, right? And to have a chat. You could not do that online and so on. I was curious to hear a little bit more from you what importance the site-specific location plays, like Brazil and Rio, the beach, the experience of nature and vegetation. In the structuring of the self, we have a lot of very different materials, like coffee beans and the coquillage, shells and water and so on. Could you a little bit explore with us about this site specificity and how much Ligia, loved also to work in Brazil? And I mean, she was in Paris for a while, but how was her relationship to her surrounding, her physical surrounding, and to Rio in specific? Or to put it another way, do you think it is a important to know Rio to understand Ligia?
Well, I think it's nice when you understand about the environment that made them choose specific materials and specific concepts and the way that they developed their own art. Like when you see the sensorial objects that she did after she moved to Paris. It's interesting because when she went to Paris for the second time, like she didn't have any money anymore. So for her, it was easier to produce her works with things she found in the streets. Like she lived in an apartment that in the first floor had had a supermarket. So that was where she easily found the fruit bags and other things, you know, to work her sensorial objects. When you see the propositions, the proposals, you can see a lot of materials found easily in a university, as newspapers, as elastic bands, other sources also. About the sensorial objects with like natural things like stones and rocks, actually, like when she started in Rio, and it was like natural things she found near her house, you know, small stones, of sand, shells. Well, she lived just near the sea. So it was like things that she normally found there and began her work. The relational objects are the same, like she started with a group of things that was easily found for her. And the other, there were other objects that were implemented by their own participants that brought to her so that they could experience the things that they thought they felt had to be an interest in their lives and their memories, personal memories, and ask her to introduce in their specific cases and experiences.
Oh, I see. That's really interesting. So I was curious if we could end our conversation today by sharing, if you share with us, how you experienced life, Ligia. I mean, if you have an anecdote or, a small secret about her that you want to share, or something that is super important to you that people know, but that is not written in exhibition books, you know, like, what is your spontaneous and strongest association right now with Ligia as a person?
What I can see, like could see around the years, first when I was young, like I had the impression of a person who had a lot of special and nice things to be experienced in her house. And during like my childhood and then when I went to university, I started seeing Ligia as an artist because of all the relations that teachers and at the art department did my to my works and Ligia's. What I can see is special thing about that isn't written. You can see like her diaries are, they have a lot of special remindings and like dreamings and experiences she had that introduced a lot of different objects to her work. Basically, I think everything that we have digitalized is all the legacy that we have to be presented. What I understand that by a family member is that when she decided, when she came back for the first time to Paris, from Paris to Rio, she decided to be an artist and would live for that. She abdicated her marriage and her kids. She also, like in a way, abdicate them as a priority. So, in one of her texts and her diaries, she said, like, one day my family will understand the importance of art. Of the art to me and the way that I couldn't be a different person and they would love me as I am. And that for me is like the most interesting way to understand her and the family and the legacy that she sent throughout the years as a person, and not only as an artist.
That's a very strong thought by Ligia that you share with us for the end of our conversation. So I understand that it's still in development. The heritage of Ligia is very rich and not yet everything is explored. It's the letters you mentioned are digitized, but not yet all translated and into English and so on. So thank you so much for taking your time and sharing all these amazing insights with us. And yes, dear audience, please visit our show or visit the website from the foundation or read our catalog. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Catherine, for the opportunity.
If you hold the stone, hold it in her hand. If you feel the weight, my hands off, you'll never be late, marinheiro só, to understand.
This podcast series was conceived by Katrin Hoog and produced by Kim Stengel, with a song dedicated to Ligia Clark by Gaetano Veloso from 1971. We would like to thank the speakers, further also Christiane Klutz and Klaus Kovacs, as well as the directors of the respective institutions and the minister for the Kunsthaus Zurich and Klaus Biesenbach for the Neue Nationalgalerie. Copyrights are with the Zürcher Kunstgesellschaft and the speakers. Sol dourado, e cadê as coisas?